You know, it's just, this could have been a substance that he's been taking for years. So I always refer every client to, if you have any doubt or any questions or anything that you're taking, run it over, just, you know, it's a quick phone call, run it over with your trainer, run it over with the team doctor. They're always around, you know, because this could have been avoided easily just by asking a simple question. Is this okay or not?
Rick Bucher.
I have to be honest with you. The first time I read this news release, I didn't read androgen. I read estrogen. And I'm thinking, man, what is Joakim up to?
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 35th episode of the BJ and Bucher Podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. And I just discovered as we were prepping for the show today that I have a new nickname. that is BJ Armstrong, also known as Had To. In rap circles. In hip-hop circles.
Ah.
Yeah, I knew that would please you. BJ, so what's up with the... What's my nickname and where did it come
Rick
from?
Rick Bucher, a.k.a. Action Brunson.
So is this like an homage to Rick Brunson?
Action, you know what I mean? That's who you look like.
We're talking about Charles Bronson. Don't age me now.
You know what I mean? I want you to come with it today, Rick. Come with it today.
All right. Well, I'm going to attempt to do that right now. Going into the first quarter, we are going to have news around the league. This is NBA news. And this is a big one because I am surprised by the timing in that Carmelo Anthony is saying that he sees the writing on the wall. Now, when I first heard that, and he was referencing to the fact that they were going to shut him down for this season and they were going to look at the young guys, that's one thing. Now Carmelo is suggesting he sees the writing on the wall that his career with the Knicks may be coming to an end. And I wonder, BJ, when you hear that, how do you interpret that in terms of Carmelo has come to terms with the fact that the Knicks want to move him and he could be playing elsewhere, or that he's looking big picture and simply not only his career with the Knicks, but his career period may be coming to an end?
Because we have a hip-hop theme today. I'm going to ask the question first. What time is it?
Okay.
I think Carmelo Anthony has finally looked at the clock and said the clock is ticking on his career.
It's big picture?
I think it's big picture. Carmelo Anthony is not on the time schedule of building a team.
Right.
Carmelo is right now, and he has to play right now because every minute that's lost, he can never recover. So I'm asking Carmelo what time is it? And Carmelo has to, and I think he has come to the reality that I have to live in the moment and do it right now, because he's not the 25 or 26-year-old Carmelo that has time to waste. Right now, the New York Knicks are building something. Right now, the New York Knicks, with Porzingis and their players, are maybe a year or two or possibly longer away. They need a break. And Carmelo right now is in the moment, and I really feel that Carmelo has to make a decision. He loves New York. I'm sure his family loves New York. He's embraced the culture there. The reality is, I don't think it's fit for him of the time frame of the players that they currently have and how the roster is constructed and to where he's at in his career.
Okay, and to be clear, what I'm seeing is that he is referencing when he says writing on the wall when it comes to how they're using him for the remainder of this season. But a lot of people are reading into that that he sees a sea change when it comes to his place with the Knicks. I ask you, because you have a client in the midst of this, also a pending free agent. How does this news from Carmelo Anthony impact Derrick Rose?
It doesn't. It doesn't affect Derrick Rose, because Derrick Rose has shown that he can be a standalone player in this league. He's shown that he's had the ability to play and figure things out, whether who's ever on the roster.
Right.
So this doesn't affect Derrick Rose at all.
Well, wait. But how can you say that? Because a team with Carmelo Anthony and a team without Carmelo Anthony, if Derrick Rose is planning on staying in New York, is a very different thing. And not to say that he can't be that guy, but I've seen no chemistry this year Derrick and Carmelo, which has surprised me.
The players, I feel, have chemistry. Derrick Rose and Carmelo Anthony, as stated by the Knicks organization, they are committed to a system of play. And that system is going to take time while you're implementing and putting the pieces together. The system right now has taken control of how they're going to play, and they're got to incorporate a certain style or players that's going to fit that system. Carmelo Anthony right now is a 20-plus score in this league, whether he's running the triangle or not. The triangle is predicated on ball movement, player movement. You just can't put five players out there without a certain skill level and a certain skill set. I got to have shooters. I have to have passers. I have to have scorers. I have to play in transition. I have to have half-court sets. Right now, the Knicks are building that. Right now, the Knicks are figuring out what they need in order to build around whoever they're going to decide to build it around.
Well, I guess this comes to the heart of it, too, because I look at and talking to people around the league. Everybody says, if you put, and you just said it, you play BJ, you play Derek in pick and roll. You play him where he can play pick and roll, and I think it's more with Porzingis than with Carmelo. I haven't loved what we've seen in the pick and roll with Carmelo when we've the few times we've seen it, that you'd see an entirely different Derek Rose. I'm not convinced that Derek Rose is a good fit for the triangle.
I'm not convinced. I'm not stuck on the triangle when Phil says the triangle, because I played in the triangle, okay? Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, we didn't always run the triangle.
Well, I understand that.
Now, I'm not here to say the Bulls teams in the 90s was rebelling against the coach. No, we understood there was a time and place for everything that was needed. What we did understand was the concept of playing together.
Well, okay, that goes back to chemistry. That goes back to chemistry, which the Knicks do not have chemistry. They don't have chemistry. This isn't just the triangle.
Here's the thing, though. Carmelo, this is, I want to quote Carmelo, because Carmelo said something the other night that
by the way, that's the voice of Shane Freeman, our producer.
Yeah, Carmelo said something the other night that I think is really important to take into consideration when we talk about this subject. And he said that, I don't think me going out there trying to score 30 and 40 points every night and playing that way is going to help them out at this point. I think it's more about getting that experience and letting them go out there and play through that right now. It's challenging, but I think it's for the greater good for everybody on this team. Is he accepting that the fact that he's not even going to try to put up buckets anymore for them? So he's just like, I'm done. Is that a nice quote? Is he saying he's done or I don't know.
That's a media quote. That's a media quote.
Right.
Yes. I'm going to read through the lines. You know, back in the day, Rick Bucher, you and I used to have to read through the lines. Let's read through the lines. Nice quote. He clearly doesn't want to ruffle any feathers, and I respect that. Okay. You know, I played in this league as a role player, and I played with a guy who did go out there and score 30 or 40 points and did manage to win and did figure out how to implement his talent into the framework of the team. Now, we always talk about chemistry and all of that. Chemistry is three things in the NBA, Rick, and I keep repeating this, but no one listens to me. So I'm going to say it again. Here's chemistry. Finn, and after you get done playing that great defensive possession on Rick Bucher and his offensive prowess, I have to rebound the ball in order to end the possession.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, if I have another partner, if we start playing a 2-on-2 instead of a 1-on-1, I got to pass that ball and share the ball with my teammates.
I'm good with that definition, and I would still say, under that definition, the Knicks do not have chemistry.
No. Here is the problem. And Carmelo has had this issue throughout his career, is his commitment to the defensive end. And this isn't a criticizing Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony is a great player. Carmelo Anthony is a great offensive talent. When Carmelo dedicates himself to the defensive end, it's not that he can't do it.
I agree.
It's just the consistency of which I've seen it too. Carmelo, if he dedicates himself to that end, which only requires two things of him, every player that ever put on a uniform, you got to have the effort and energy. And Carmelo has to dedicate himself to that end of the floor. And all the other things that we're talking about will take care of itself.
So why didn't he this year? Because in the past couple of years, I would understand the talent wasn't there. Let me go get my 20 and call it a night, because why am I contributing to this?
I can't
with
answer
Derek,
that.
With Porzingis, I thought they had a chance with this team. In fact, they did. They were the fourth best team a month into the season, they were the fourth best team.
You know, I'm going to give it a prime example this year. One of my favorite coaches is Steve Kerr. When Steve Kerr was able to coach Kevin Durant, you know what the surprising thing about watching Kevin Durant this year is compared to last year?
He plays defense.
Effort. He played. Now you're talking to me, Rick Bucher. Rick Bucher.
I've been talking to you the whole time. You just haven't been listening the whole time.
Rick Bucher. You know, everybody is talking and we have stats and da-da-da and analytics and PERs and POFs. I don't even know what these people are talking about when I'm talking to halftime to these GMs. I don't even know what they're talking about because most of them are just talking about stats and analytics. No, let's just watch the game. What I've noticed about Kevin Durant this year, that man is playing some defense. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen him put that type of effort into the defensive end his entire career. So when I watch Pau Gasol, for instance, Pop sets him down when he misses an assignment. When I watch LaMarcus Aldridge, when I watch these players that are playing under all of the good teams, the only thing that's wrong with the Cleveland Cavaliers right now, Rick Bucher, they're not playing defense right now.
Right.
And until they could, I don't care how good you are on the offensive end. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You can score 50 threes in a game. If I score 51, I'm still going to win that game.
Right.
Rick Bucher,
you
got to get a stop in this game. So until players commit, and normally it takes a couple years to understand what this league is all about. The only consistent thing I can do night in and night out in this league, Rick, is give you the effort and energy necessary to win a game. My jump shot ain't going to be good, Rick, and I shot it pretty good. But every night, Rick, I know I can guard you. And I know I can give the effort. And some nights, that's good enough, and some nights, it's not. And until players understand that, hey, so I'm going to leave it alone. I know I'm just talking and ranting right now, but I get so upset about all of this, man, about this and that. Hey, man, just play good basketball. We all know good basketball when we see it.
All right, here we go. Second quarter, NBA madness. This has to do with we've been seeing of late a little more conflict on the court. Swaggy P and Greg Monroe going at it. Steph Curry and a couple of the guards from the Thunder, including Russ Westbrook. Serge Ibaka and Robin Lopez actually swinging on each other. I don't know that anybody connected. Actually, I think there was a graze, at least a graze shot, but those guys meant business. But here's the thing. The league has tried so hard to legislate any kind of extracurricular activity out of the game that I feel as if guys have been handcuffed emotionally. It's not even a matter of going at each other. Like, you're not allowed to bark in a guy's direction. And I have to say, what I've seen of late actually makes me feel good because I don't want to see anybody get jacked up. I don't want to see Rudy Tomjanovic getting clocked, you know, from behind. I don't want to see anybody go through that.
Right.
But the fire and the passion, I'm good with that. And I wish that the league would just realize that every time guys square off, it doesn't mean that you're going to have the malice in the palace. That you have to, in fact, you have to let guys vent a little bit to let this game breathe. But you've been in it, man. So you tell me, what you see now and what you played in, are you glad that you're seeing a little more of this, or do you think they need to keep it curbed?
Well, I'm going to recognize this is a new day, a new era. You're absolutely right. We don't want to see anyone get hurt. And certainly these young men that play this game, they're very powerful. And someone could really get hurt. You know, if someone like a Shaquille O'Neal did hit someone, I mean, that could really damage and do some serious damage. But in saying that, you know, when I remember the first time, you know, I came in the league and I remember I was playing against the Washington Bullets at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two guys had a reputation as being tough. One was Rick Mahorn and the other was Jeff Rulin.
Hmm.
And Jeff Rulin hit me for no reason at all. I mean, Rick, I'm still mad. I saw Jeff and I was like, nah, you know. And I remember saying to myself, I wanted to say something. My curves were
you
there.
You wanted to say something? You wanted to do something?
Well, I really wanted to do something.
Yeah.
But I knew, Rick, the consequences of what that was going to happen because now everyone jumps in real quick.
Right.
Back then, Rick, you let those men settle their own problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood that, you know what, Jeff Rulin, I might have snuck in a punch, but I was going to get knocked out if I did something. And that to me, is the difference between yesterday and today's game. You knew who to pick a fight with back then.
You know,
Swaggy P is a guard. There's no way he should even be thinking about picking a fight with Greg Monroe.
Right.
Well, and that's what I wonder is, like, that players today, because I think of all the times I played pickup, and guys would get heated. How many times do we have, like, a drag-out fight where guys were throwing down? Now, I know there have been times, I've heard the stories, dudes in the hood, they get pissed off. Somebody's going to their car and they're getting a piece. Like, and that happened,
yep,
right?
Seen that.
Well, it did.
But
seen
it just
that
didn't
a couple
happen.
Times.
Even,
but Rick, can I tell you what?
Like, I walked on the wild side a couple times. That never happened to me.
Hey, Rick, let me tell you one of the funniest stories ever, man. We just get
all the white
fight.
Dudes here. Don't go for your piece. No. That might go wrong.
He might be a cop.
Yeah, exactly.
We were playing the game, and I'm going to protect the innocent here. And there was a player. He was making a substantial amount of money, and I was playing with a player. He was making minimum. And he walked up to the player that was making the minimum, and he looked at him and stood right over him and said, "You can't afford to hit me."
Wow.
Now.
Right.
And he was like, "I dare you. I dare you." And I thought to myself, that NBA rule bothered me then, and it still bothers me to this day.
Why are we not using names?
Because
you were the minimum player? You were the minimum player.
No, Rick.
Okay.
I was related to
the minimum player?
I was standing right there, front row. Okay. I was standing right there, Rick. And this player at the time was making minimum. You know, he's still in the NBA related, and we laugh about it today because we're like, you still got a chance. You know, now the league is over there. You know, that's kind of our inside joke.
Right.
What you going to do? And I always ask him. Because it was one of the fun. I mean, it happened so fast. It was like funny. Like we was all mad. Like, oh, man, we going to. And all of a sudden he said that. And everybody just like paused.
Right. Took the
and
chill
And here we are 30
put
years later. And we're still like, what you going to do, man?
Right.
So, but you know, sometimes you got to stand up for yourself and sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But I tell you what, in the old days, you really were careful who you picked your battles with. I was not messing with guys like Buck Williams. Buck Williams and Charles Oakley and all of those dudes. I was going to be as diplomatic as I could before I had to go to blows with them guys, because those guys, man, it was a different league back then. Still to this day, Rick, I don't know what I would have done. Well, I know what I would have done. I would have thought like my good friend is still thinking 30 years later about should he have hit him or not.
Right. Go ahead and write the check. Before we jump to our halftime entertainment, our guest for today's podcast is Mike Conley Jr., the terrific point guard for the Memphis Grizzlies. I have to ask you, your former teammate, Scottie Pippen.
Yes.
Said... apparently on, I assume it was on The Jump, he's been appearing on ESPN regularly, that Phil Jackson should be fired.
Oh, man.
That strikes me as one, that's a very bold statement to say that anybody, you know, that I always hate, this is what I hate. When you say somebody should be fired, and I'm like, okay, so then who should you go get?
Right.
Who comes in and solves the problem? What is Phil Jackson not doing that he should have done, and who's going to come in and do that thing? You can't. It's the easiest thing in the world to say someone should lose their job. We hear that every day on social media.
Right.
I just, knowing Scotty, knowing his history with Phil, knowing his knowledge of the league, as you know the league, you know things take time. And look, I had my doubts about Phil as a GM because he's never done the job.
Right.
I've had my doubts as far as how he has communicated and the fact that he has not, I don't think he's been the greatest diplomat or manager of communicating, whether it be with his players or with the media. But that said, just to jump out and say a dude should be fired, I of all people, I was surprised that your former teammate and one of Phil Jackson's former players, Scottie Pippen, would be bold enough to say something like that.
Yeah, that's shocking. And, you know, it's kind of disappointing. because everyone knows, Rick, and you and I have been in this business a long time. You know, when you grab that microphone or you take that pen, you have a responsibility to tell it, to report the news and state the facts. You know, you and I both know how difficult it is to win in this league. Okay, you can be the greatest GM and have all the theories and all those concepts, but in the end, it takes talent to win in this league. And
well, it takes time too, doesn't it? I mean, to build a team, which is what Phil Jackson faces, there's never a quick fix.
And now it's even more complicated because of salary cap. You know, you have contracts that you inherited. You have a new CBA now.
You have an owner that's fighting with Charles Oakley and making a scene.
And I'm going to say this on air. You know, many times these general managers, remember, these general managers aren't the gatekeepers. It's the owners. It's the owner's team.
Right.
And if the owner says he wants to win right now and that's what he wants, so be it. You can give him all the recommendations that you want.
Right.
But it's the owner's team. It's his money.
Right.
You know, so in the end, you know, we can blame Phil Jackson. In the end, the four powers to be that sit at that table, the general manager, the head coach, the owner, and the player.
And the best player. Yeah.
And if one of those people aren't on the same page,
right,
it'll never work. And clearly right now, the Knicks have some issues that they're working out internally.
So
I'm... And go ahead.
Let me ask you that. So you got those four.
Yes.
How many, when you look at the Knicks organization, is anybody on the same page? Do you look at those four?
Well,
can you say that anybody, any among those four, are actually connected?
Well, the one thing that I learned, Rick, you don't have to be on the same page. Your best player has to understand that what the X factor of this league is all about. Winning, Rick, is the X factor. The best player is the only person that can solve the problem in the moment.
Okay, but if you're planning, if you're trying, that we're not just in the moment with the Knicks. There's work to be done. I need to know that Jeff Hornacek is buying into what Phil Jackson wants and the timeline that he wants. I need to know that James Dolan is willing to allow Phil Jackson the time and the resources to make his vision a reality. And I need to know that Carmelo Anthony is on board with all of that. And I see none of that with the Knicks.
Here's the elephant in the room, and we can stop dancing around it. Until they figure out what they're going to do with Carmelo Anthony,
everything else is at a stop.
We can talk about, name me a team that has won without someone that they drafted.
Right. Here's the thing. I think they figured it out. It's a matter of when that comes home to Carmelo Anthony.
Exactly. This isn't a knock against Carmelo Anthony. And I've been in this situation enough to understand Carmelo is just on a different time frame than Porzingis.
Right.
Carmelo and Phil are going to have to sit down and figure out what is the best in the best interest of all the parties involved. Because right now, Phil has to continue to develop talent there for the Knicks organization by also sprinkling in players that can help him win now. That are so that they can get to where they are. Every team is trying to get to, at least I assume, which is to win the final game of the season.
All right, it's halftime. Enjoy our halftime entertainment.
Am I performing at halftime today, or is it?
No, you're not.
Okay.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, it's the halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast. And today's halftime entertainment is by Pete Rock and CL Smooth and their classic, They Reminisce Over You. Enjoy.
Yeah. I reminisce for a spell, or shall I say think back 22 years ago to keep it on track. The birth of a child on the 8th of October. A toast, but my granddaddy came sober. Count all the fingers and the toes. Now I suppose you hope the little black boy grows. 18 years younger than my mama, but I really got beaten with the girl of trauma. In single parenthood, there I stood. By the time she was 21, had another one. This one's a girl, let's name her Pam. Same father as the first, but you don't give a damn. Irresponsible,
plane, not thinking. Papa said chill, but the brother keep winking. Still he won't down, you would tear out your hide on your side while the baby make a slide. But mama got wise to the game, the youngest of five kids, hun, here it is. After 10 years without no spouse, mama's getting married in the house. Listen, positive over negative, for the woman a master. Mother queen's rising a chapter. Deja vu, tell you what I'm gonna do when they reminisce over you, my God. When I date back, I recall a man off the family tree. My right-hand Papa Doc, I see. Woo. Took me from a boy to a man, so I always had a father when my biological didn't bother. Yeah. Taking care of this, so who am I to pick up? Pick up. Not a bad ticker, but I'm clocking Pop's liver. Yeah. But you can never say that as life is through. Five kids at 21, believe he got a right to.
Right.
Here we go while I check the scene with the Portuguese lover at the age of 14. The same age, front page, no fuss. But I bet you all you know they live longer than us.
Right.
Never been seen now. That's where you're wrong. But give the man a taste and he's gone. Nodding off sleep to a jazz tune. I can hear his head banging on the wall in the next room. I get the pillow and hope I don't wake him. For this man to cuss, hear it all in verbatim. Telling me how to raise my boy unless he's taking over. I said, Pop, maybe when you're older. We laughed all night about the hookers at the party. My old man standing yelling, good God almighty. Use your condom, take sips of the brew. When they reminisce over you, for real.
For real, baby.
All right. Hope you enjoyed the halftime entertainment. I know I did. Here's the third quarter, and you know that means it's time for our NBA trivia challenge. I don't know what the overall season score is. All I know is I'm on a winning streak.
Shane is undefeated.
I can't even see the beginning.
I'm gonna say that.
Can't see the beginning of this winning streak. It started so long ago. But here we are.
There's Action Brunson again. There's Action.
Action Brunson.
Action. There's Action,
Action Brunson bringing it.
There it is.
Playoff powerhouses. BJ, where is LeBron James ranked among the NBA's career points per game leaders in playoff history? Is he second? Is he fourth? Is he fifth? Or is he sixth? That's career points per game average leaders in playoff history.
I'm just going to say four.
And that would be incorrect. He is actually sixth, although he just passed Shaq as seventh, moving into seventh on the NBA's all-time scoring list. He is ranked just under Kevin Durant for career playoff points per game, averaging 28 in the playoffs for his career thus far. I'm guessing that Dallas series in the finals a couple of years ago, That probably hurt the overall.
Yeah, that's the Action Brunson I know. Always growing. Bringing the action. Okay.
All right. What do you got?
Who holds the number one spot for career rebounds per game in the NBA playoffs? A, Wilt Chamberlain. B, Bill Russell. C, Eddie Miller. Or D, Charlie Tyra.
Oh, my God. This is average rebounds per game in the playoffs.
In the playoffs.
Be very careful.
What time is it?
Playoffs?
We're talking playoffs.
I'm just going to go. I had never heard of those two guys, so it's probably one of them, but I'm going to say Bill Russell.
You are correct.
Go with what you know with.
Hey, listen to this stat, though. This is a crazy stat.
Yeah.
Bill Russell averaged 24.9 rebounds per game over the course of his career in the playoffs.
That's crazy.
Hey. And, Rick, there it is again. Once you play good defense, if you don't rebound the ball, he didn't even score the ball. And then y'all talking to me about playoffs? Playoffs? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rick.
All right. This player holds the number four spot on the NBA's all-time average list for three-pointers made per game in the playoffs.
Oh, wow.
All right, number four on the NBA's all-time average list. Is it Eric Gordon, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Kemba Walker, or Jason Richardson?
Say that. What's the question again?
It is, who holds the number four spot? This is a Shane special. Like, who the hell even looks this far down the list? NBA's all-time average list for three-pointers made per game in the playoffs. Eric Gordon, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Kemba Walker, or Jason Richardson?
I'm just going to say Jason Richardson. He's probably been the only player that's played more than five games in the playoffs.
And that would be incorrect. And I feel bad for you that you got this question. It's actually Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who averages three made per playoff game.
He's played
about 12 of them, because I think he's played in four games.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I feel you on that.
Hey, you know what? Shane's new nickname just came to me, Rick.
Action. What's that?
Action Shady Shane. You know what I mean? He's shady.
Shady Shane. You know what? I like that. I think that's appropriate.
Shady, man.
All
right.
So, victory has already been claimed by yours truly. By the way, Eric Gordon was second on that list. Jason Richardson was sixth, which really surprises me.
Well, you know, he's the only one that's played more than like a playoff series. The rest of them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm just going on,
I'm with the guy who played
the game. You know what I mean?
Like,
I think Richard Jefferson is the only guy that actually won a playoff series on that list.
And Richard Jefferson wasn't even on the list. So there you go. As we like to say on the show, I'm with you when you're right.
Oh, I'm with you. Okay, Rick, here's the go.
Okay.
This player holds the number one spot on the NBA's all-time average list for assists per game in the playoffs. A, John Stockton. B, Chris Paul. Magic Johnson. D, Oscar Robertson.
I'm going to whittle it down between Magic and John. And I'm going to say John.
That would be incorrect.
No! Who is it?
Y'all call him Magic. Yeah. We call him Young Buck. You know what I mean?
I know. Y'all call him Magic.
We call him Young Buck, man. That's Young Buck, man. Young Buck, come on. He averaged like 12.
I probably should have gone in that direction. Yeah, but you know what? That was a freebie because I win anyway. Victory is mine.
Action Brunson.
Ring it again. I'm looking back in my rearview mirror. You know when they say objects are closer than they appear? That's a lie. Because I'm looking in my rearview mirror and I can't even see where this winning streak began. That is so far behind me.
Here's the gift for this week, gentlemen.
Lord, we're
going to put Rick Victor. All I do is win.
Yeah. I'm down with that. I'm also down with our next guest, Mike Conley Jr. We caught up with him.
Man.
As everybody knows, signed a huge deal before the season. And, you know, the beauty of it is I haven't heard a lot of people busting on Mike for that contract. But has he heard people talking to him about that contract?
Well, he's a pro.
We will find out that the answer to that and many more. Here's our conversation for this week with Mike Conley Jr. All right, welcome to the BJ and Bucher podcast. We're lucky to be joined by Grizzlies point guard Mike Conley. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So the first thing I have to ask, I haven't caught up with you this season, basically. You have added the three-point shooting. You and Mark in particular have added to it. And you're shooting 39%, shooting way more threes and maybe the second best percentage you've shot. Mm-hmm. What was it that you did to prepare for this season, anticipating that you were going to be doing a lot more of that?
Well, one, communicating with coach, knowing that I was going to come in the year with the responsibility to shoot more. And I got right in the gym, you know, just worked on a bunch of different shots because I knew that there would be a point where they're not wide open standstill shots that I'm going to have to work on coming off of pin downs, coming off of pick and rolls and pulling up and with hands in your face, getting fouled and working on all those things that I hadn't really had to deal with in my career because I was more just spot up and play off our big. So it was a different kind of summer for him.
So what was the key to prepare for that? Because obviously catch and shoot threes and the form and the technique to that is a little bit different than the ball coming up into your hands and still having all that. What did you work on to get that drilled?
I think my footwork more than anything was the most important, just because of having to control your speed, having to be able to stop on a dime, you know, squaring your hips to the shot and squaring your shoulders and those things. As I kept working on it and kept, you know, drilling it, made the shot a lot easier and just continued to work. I'm still working on it now. So after every day after practice, I'm constantly trying to figure out, you know, how to keep my balance and things like that.
What is every shooter has like that key thing that when things kind of go awry or you need to get back in line, this is the thing I pinpoint or focus on. What is it for you?
For me, it's always from my hips down. So it's my knees, make sure I have good knee bend and being square with the bucket. You know, I can get to where I start turning a little bit and you can easily say, oh, my elbow's not in or my wrist, I'm not following through all these other things. But for me, it's always been from the ground up.
If it starts there, everything else kind of comes into place.
Yeah,
that makes sense. That makes sense. One of the things, you signed the big contract. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's been gratifying for me is I haven't heard anything about it. Like,
right.
I don't know if you thought about it going in, but right. I'm thinking anybody signs for that kind of money, then every like the scrutiny,
right.
the microscope, all of that. But I really haven't heard a whole lot. Are you surprised? Do you have an idea of why maybe you haven't had to go through that?
Right. You know, really, it's surprising that it hasn't been as big on that.
National scale.
Yep. But, you know, I hear it, you know, through social media and after games where in different arenas, you know, just
right.
fans chanting it and all, you know, all these different things about being paid and overpaid and whatnot. And,
right.
It really has done nothing but, you know, added to the year and made it fun. You know,
right.
it's I've been able to concentrate on myself, concentrate on the team and not having to worry about, you know,
yes.
all this sideshow
yes.
stuff. So.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder, like, how does your life change? Because I would imagine a lot of it is going to the bank. It's going in. It's not like you're suddenly, you know,
right.
buying yachts and doing all that
right.
stuff. Is there a change? Like, if there's an impact on your lifestyle or your thinking or your planning or whatever, what is it?
You know, really, it's for, you know, my son, his future, my
yeah.
family's future. And like you said, it's not going to yacht. To you know, jewelry and all these
right,
things.
Right.
I live
you don't
the
got
same
like 18,
lifestyle.
19 cars.
No. You know, me and my wife. You know, we keep it very you know simple
right.
life. So, but really, it's knowing that I have the security one. But you know, just taking care of the family, taking care of you know, hopefully the generations down the line, and
yeah.
having something in place for you know, the security of that in itself.
Yeah. And now, pace of play, Grizzlies are still. One of the slowest when it comes to that. You guys have modernized the game, added the three and all that. As the point guard, like how much do you want to play faster? You guys are playing faster,
right.
but can you feel that on a nightly basis? And what is it like when you are running the show for the team that probably plays the slowest in the league?
Yeah. You know, for me, it's one of those things that, you know, the grass isn't always greener for what we have, you know, on our team. We have some of the better bigs in the league, you know, at their positions. And it's one thing to go out there for me and want to be like, okay, I want to play up and down, shoot a bunch of threes and all this. But for how we've built our team over the years, it's just not who we are. And I want to win. And if we're going to win, we have to play kind of in that middle, you know, pace area, back half of the pace in the league. But you know, it's one of the things I just have to adjust my game to and be willing to, you know, sacrifice different areas to make sure our team is at the best it can be.
Steve Smith and I were on NBA TV at the All-Star break, and we were asked which team we thought was capable of knocking off the Warriors or coming out of the West if it wasn't Golden State, since they're the prohibitive favorite.
Right.
Both of us said you guys, and it would be a matter of pace of play, but that you had sort of the antidote. You could play size. You can play a different way than most everybody else plays.
Right.
How do you impose that? Like, because you guys have been up and down, and, I mean, through the course of this season,
how do you get to being able to do what you do best and not allow them to do what they do best?
Well, whenever we play the Warriors, it's always been a chess game of who can implement their style first, who can kind of throw the first punches and control the tempo. And if we're able to, you know, do that with our skill level in the paint, with our guys, you know, our big guys being able to dominate the ball, and us being able to find them, you know, early in possession to get them the ball in post, it slows the game down. It allows us to get to the free throw line. It allows, you know, just everything to kind of fall into our favor as far as pace.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's got to be some, you hope they miss some shots. You know, you hope you contest as much as you can. You hope that you rebound. And,
sure.
And those are things that we just have to concentrate on outside of the pace of play.
You haven't gotten the All-Star recognition. You haven't gotten the big national recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel as if you have established yourself as a cornerstone for this franchise. Do you get satisfaction out of, without maybe the accolades, do you get satisfaction out of the way you've been able to establish yourself with this franchise?
Oh, of course. You know, I'm truly blessed to have been in Memphis for 10 years and to have done the things that I've been able to do. Like you said, without any recognition, without any, you know, I feel like without any help, you know, just kind of doing it under the radar,
yeah.
Constantly working, just being a pro. And, you know, I've always said if any recognition I do get or accolades, that'll all come if it's meant to be. Otherwise, I'm all about the team. I'm about the franchise. I'm about seeing the growth from when we were winning 20 games a year to now we're winning 40 to 50 a year and going to the playoffs. And contending. So, you know, those are the things I take satisfaction out of the whole career.
This is from one of our avid listeners, Matt Bucher. If for a young up-and-coming point guard, what is the number one thing you would tell him or her to work on, the skill or the thing that they need to play in today's game?
Well, I think in today's game, you have to be able to score the ball as a point guard. We all know that I'm an unselfish point guard. I'm one of the most guys,
right.
You know, most unselfish out there. Just
right.
Want to look for teammates. But if you're able to shoot, you're able to score,
yeah.
It makes the playmaking easier. It makes the floor spacing easier for you. It allows the game to be slower for you. So I think a lot of people, it's kind of switched a little bit for me. Like, I want to say be aggressive on learning how to shoot, learning
right.
how to get to spots to score the ball. Because once you're able to do that and establish that, the playmaking becomes easier
yeah.
and you're able to see the floor better.
Do you ever think about, like, if you played in an up-tempo? I mean, we see, like, mm-hmm. Russ, we see James, we see some of these guys, and they're triple-doubles, they're getting mm-hmm. numbers across the board. You know, the way your team is composed, you are proof of why the guys back in the day weren't getting triple-doubles.
Right, right.
Because you had bigs that were rebounding,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not how it was.
Right.
Do you ever think about, like, what you would do or how you would play if you were in one of those?
Oh yeah, there's always times I go home and be like, man, you know, I might be able to do that, you know, what he did tonight,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it could definitely be interesting being able to run and just be able to gun and spacing and different things like
right,
that. But
right.
End of the day, I'm like I said, I'm happy with who I've been around, and the guys have all made me a better player because of the teammates I've had at this, you know, in this team.
Well, Mike, we wish you the best of luck, best of health. Thank you so much for taking time.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Hope you enjoyed that with Mike. I know I did. Keep in mind, if you're listening on iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show, rate, and leave comments. We'd love to hear what you have to think about it. You can also check out our brand new website, bjandbucher.com. We have some great stuff going up there, just not on the podcast, just not podcasts. We've got video components. We've got written stories by not only myself, but players like Ryan Hollins, who's playing overseas. He has some great insight into what it's like to make the move overseas after you've played in the NBA. And you can always follow us on Twitter, BJ and Bucher. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll be back at you next week.